It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
All right, we're live again from National Harbor, Maryland, the Conservative Political Action Committee. And this is the same morning when we are waiting for President Donald Trump to come on property and speak to the crowd. That should be interesting. Last night, Vice President Pence spoke, and it's a pretty exciting place. And, of course, I'm seeing a lot of my friends and voices that you hear on the air with me, but I don't get to see them in person. And one of them is Professor John Lott, who was just happened to be walking by. I met Professor Lott when he was a professor at the University of Chicago, when I was on talk radio there. And you've heard me say, but it has to be repeated, that John began to write he's an economist, right, John?
Yeah, I'm an economist.
That's really your background. But I think that brings to mind a detailed mind following statistics and analyzing data. And so you began to be interested in this whole business of gun control and the Second Amendment. I've forgotten how that happened.
Right. Well, I mean, I'd done a lot of work on crime. I'd been chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission. I mean, people think economists, what do they have to do with crime? And it's just what economics is something's more costly, people do less of it. And if it becomes riskier for criminals to commit crime, they do less of it. I mean, that's whether it's higher price of apples, people buy fewer apples, higher price of committing crime, fewer crimes. And we apply that in lots of different ways. And I got into doing the gun stuff. I was teaching at the Wharton Business School, and I made the mistake of telling some of the students that I was a little bit ahead in the syllabus. And so I had some students come up to me after class one day and ask me if I could spend a little bit of time talking about gun control issues. And I figured, well, I guess I could. But it forced me to kind of look at the literature more closely than I had previously. I'd never really had much interest in guns. And so I started working out there and ended up moving to Chicago where we met. And I continued working on it there and, had a paper that got some attention. And the rest is, you know, kind of history, I guess.
Yeah, but part of that history is that wasn't a very popular thing to do. And so you have all this academic, you have all the credentials. Your work spoke for itself. In terms of academia, you have a fabulous resume. But because the content of what you chose to concentrate on, you paid a big price for that.
Well, I mean, just at Chicago, I guess I've told you the story before, but end up having to leave. Richard Daley was the mayor. He called up Hugo Sonnenschein, who was the president of the University of Chicago, and basically went through all the wonderful things that the city wanted to do with the university. And at the end he said, but Lott's continued presence at the university was going to do, quote, irreparable harm to the relationship between the city and the school. And they wanted me out. So, I had something similar happen when I moved to Yale. But, my guess is if I'd been on the opposite side of the political spectrum and you'd had some politicians come, you know, Republican politicians come and complain, Hugo Sonnenschein or others would have told him to go jump in the lake someplace.
You know, John, isn't it ironic? And you think about that. This Mayor Daley, who did a lot of good things in Chicago, I think you'd probably agree that Chicago really grew in many ways under John Daley Jr.'s leadership. But that was one of the terrible things that he did. And now, fast forward this many years, and look what's happening in Chicago.
Right. Well, the problems with crime actually have some roots back with Daley. I mean, Rahm Emanuel's messed up a lot of things. But when Richard Daley took over being mayor in 1991, 67% of murders were solved through arrests. When he left in 2011, 20 years later, it was down to 30%. Just to give people an idea, nationally, it's about 64%.
So explain what you – see, stats are so natural to you. Explain what you mean.
Well, I mean, somebody goes and commits a murder, or out of every 100 murders that are committed – when he first got in there, 67 of those murderers were arrested. 67 out of 100 murderers were arrested. When he left, only 30 out of every 100 murderers were arrested. And now it's in Chicago, it's down to 20.
I was going to say, it's got to be ridiculously low.
Well, I mean, 30 is pretty ridiculously low. And but it's continued falling under Rahm Emanuel. He's done lots of stupid things. He's when he became mayor... He closed down detective bureaus in the high crime rate parts of the city. He disbanded a lot of the gang units that are there. You know, big surprise. You get rid of the gang units and there's more gang crime that occurs. Just about a year ago, he made an agreement with the ACLU that after each time a police officer stops and talks to somebody, they have to fill out what's the equivalent of two large legal pages of questions. Basically, it takes 45 minutes, an hour for these officers to fill it out. So you go in on the street for a few hours and talk to a few people, and then you got to spend the rest of your day filling out forms explaining, you know, who you talked to, the racial information, gender, other things of the person you talked to. And, you know, it's really amazingly detailed questions that they ask them to have to fill out. And it just... a lot of time. So one, it kind of dissuades police officers from talking to anybody because every person they talk to means a lot of paperwork that they have to do. And it also means that they're not very efficient because they're having to spend a lot of time in their offices filling out paperwork. So all these things. But, you know, the point is the problems in Chicago are largely self-inflicted. And but Mayor Daley's hands aren't clean on it. There was a huge drop, as I say, in how effective police were then, and it's just gotten worse.
All right, so there's much we could say about that, and maybe we'll come back to that. But you told me earlier that the Fourth Circuit had just made a decision on guns that I want us to talk about because I don't know if people know. So there's so much news right now. Things are getting lost. So
sure.
What happened?
Right. Well, Maryland, after Sandy Hook, passed a law that was very similar to the old federal assault weapons ban, banning guns based on how they look and also the size of magazines, you know, how many bullets they could hold. And the circuit court just had what they call an en banc decision, where all the circuit court judges went down and voted. And it was essentially along party lines. It was 10-4 vote upholding Maryland's assault weapons ban. So, and it's largely, you read this and you kind of wonder, do these guys have any clue what these guns are? Because they talk about that there's no Second Amendment right to have military weapons, to have weapons of war. The thing is... none of these guns that are being banned are what one would have in a military. Look, there are three different types of guns. They're machine guns. One pull of the trigger, lots of bullets come out as long as you keep the trigger depressed. Semi-automatic, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. It reloads itself, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out, and so on. And then you have manually loaded guns where you have to physically yourself put a bullet in the chamber. We're not talking about machine guns here. We're talking about semi-automatics. And these guns are singled out because they look on the outside like military weapons, but they function as any hunting rifle does. And so, you know, you just read the language of this decision and you figure, you know, these guys, they have no clue what they're talking about with regard to the guns. I mean, even simple things like that. But it's a party line vote, and that's what you see over and over in these circuit court and district court decisions, that Democrats vote for bans and the Republicans vote against it.
All right, so with the election of Donald Trump and the election of Republicans to, well, they already had control of the House and the Senate, but they maintained control. Are you optimistic on this whole issue of the Second Amendment? Do you see any threats to that freedom coming up?
Oh, I mean, there are lots of threats. They're coming up. I mean, surely winning the court was a huge success. But, you know, one of the reasons why I wrote my latest book, The War on Guns, is just all the different threats that are there. So, for example, California just passed an initiative in November that requires background checks on ammunition sales. You're only allowed to buy 100 bullets at a time, and you have to go through a background check, which costs about $70. So you can buy 100 rounds of .22 ammunition for, let's say, $12. But then you have to pay another $70 on top of that to go through the background check. That's like a 600% tax that they've added on it. In Connecticut, Governor Malloy there wants to increase the cost of getting a concealed carry permit from $140 to $370. You know, Democrats talk about caring about the poor, but when you have, you know, a 600% tax on buying ammunition or making it $370 for somebody to go and get a concealed carry permit, who do they think they're stopping from doing that? It's my research, if it convinces me of anything, is that it's poor minorities who live in high-crime urban areas, the ones who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, are the ones who benefit the most from having the option to be able to protect themselves. Police are extremely important. I think police are the single most important factor for reducing crime, but police understand they almost always arrive on the crime scene after the crimes occur, and the question is, what should people do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves? And these individuals, the most vulnerable people in our society, they're the ones that these rules that the Democrats keep pushing are the ones who are left defenseless.
You know, I was just thinking about all this stuff about Sweden and the crime rate. I think they said Ami Horowitz claims that the murder rate, I think Tucker Carlson repeated this, from Swedish statistics, that their murder rate's up 70%, and that a lot of their immigrants are carrying Kalashnikov rifles, that they're just having all these weapons that are unbelievable. And, of course, the people in Europe, the Swedes can't carry guns, and that's just, I'm just bringing that up because we are defenseless against criminals who carry guns, and they're increasingly better armed while we're disarmed.
Right. Well, I mean, you look at all the terrorist attacks in, like, France or Belgium that have occurred. All those weapons were illegal. I mean, you can't even get a semi-automatic gun in France. And, you know, these guys have machine guns. You know, the bizarre thing is, if you look at the rock concert shooting where 89 people were killed in November 2015, there were actually 8 off-duty police officers who were present at the concert. But because of French law at the time banned off-duty officers from being able to have their guns with them, you know, they were defenseless. They weren't able to do anything to stop other than just try to hide. And one can only imagine. I mean, it's hard for me to believe, or it's hard for me to understand how people can't trust police officers who they trust on the job with guns not to be able to have a gun afterwards, let alone civilians. But, you know, you look at these other terrorist attacks in France, you'd have people who would be 15 feet away from these terrorists taking movies of them with their cell phones, but not being able to do anything to actually stop them from engaging in these attacks.
It is, and we're being set up for the same thing. I know my husband is a FBI agent, and as an FBI agent, he now he's retired, is not able to carry his gun into the District of Columbia. Can't carry his gun, can't be armed.
Right.
Even as a former federal law enforcement agent. I mean, there are rules that are making us less safe. John, you've done such a great job of exposing this. By the way, it's crimeresearch.org, crimepreventionresearch.org, and his latest book, The War on Guns. So, Dr. John Lott, thanks for joining us.
Great talking to you.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you at CPAC. And we're waiting for the president to speak this morning, actually. Lots of people milling about, lots of Secret Service this morning, dogs sniffing briefcases. It's interesting. I think there were kids lined up. I was on my way like at 6 o'clock this morning, and the kids were already lined up to get inside, so I was wondering how it was getting on Radio Row. But we managed. It worked out. The Secret Service is doing a great job. And, of course, as we are here, we see all kinds of people, and I certainly see friends of mine, people who become my friends because of their abilities, their knowledge on various areas. And one of my favorites is Trevor Loudon. I met you in D.C. several years ago when you were still living in New Zealand.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was so fascinating to me that you were writing about communism, and you were a New Zealander, and we've had this discussion many, many times, but you explained to me that much of the worldwide communism sort of sprung, had a nexus in New Zealand.
Yeah, look, back in the 80s, you know, when the Cold War was really raging, you know, the Soviets were trying to disband NATO. They had big marches through Europe, you know, ban the bomb, disband NATO, etc. And what they did, they focused on New Zealand to break New Zealand out of our military alliance with America, and which they succeeded in doing, and that was supposed to help the breakup of NATO. But Ronald Reagan stymied that. But there was a lot of communist focus on New Zealand. They had a huge influence in our Labour Party, which is the equivalent of your Democratic Party. They controlled the labor union movement. They controlled the peace movement. And they were able to get legislation passed in our parliament banning nuclear warships from our harbors, which destroyed the Australia-New Zealand-United States military alliance. And that was done in 1984, you know, supposedly to help the destruction of NATO. It was a chess-playing move, you know. We'll take this pawn out over here because that will influence what happens on the other side of the world. And fortunately, Europe didn't fall for the bait, but that was the plan.
You were really young in 1984.
I was a teenager.
Were you paying attention to that?
Well, I was, yeah. I was angry because, you know, look, when you're in New Zealand, you know, I grew up with my parents. My parents lived through World War II, and they faced invasion by the Japanese. And if it hadn't been for your troops in the Guadalcanal and the Coral Sea and Midway and all those big battles in the Pacific, the Japanese would have invaded my country. I probably wouldn't be here. So, you know, there's that gratitude, that understanding that we were saved by your country. So it really galled me when we basically spat in your face and banned your warships from our harbors. You know, we welcomed your troops there a few years before, but and that was all completely orchestrated from the Soviet Union. Completely 100% a Soviet operation. And that's what really spurred me into looking at the influence of communism and how it is actually far more influential than anybody realizes. You know, look, if you look at your country right now, you've got a nuclear deal with Iran, you've got a big drive towards immigration amnesty, you've got Obamacare, your military's been gutted. Every one of those things has been driven by the communist movement in your country. They control the Democratic Party here.
You know, it's amazing, Trevor, because I've watched this thing. You know, my dad served in World War II. And, of course, that just that means the conversation around your dinner table at times is very different than the next generation. You know, we learned by osmosis the importance of freedom. And we watched a lot of things unfold and develop. And so the younger generation doesn't have that perspective, which is what we have to change. But I think it's for a time. You know, we weren't even allowed to say communism. If you used the word communist, you were kind of silly, funny, passe, because there are no more communists. And they managed to make you a fool for using that word. But it's coming back.
It's coming back
in vogue that we can actually say that.
Well, it's so obvious now. You know, we've seen a very violent election cycle. We saw 100,000, well, a million women gather in Washington, D.C., an event organized by the Communist Party. you know, with
on
with,
paper. I mean, the Communist Party USA.
Yeah, they were there sponsoring it. You had Judith LeBlanc of the Communist Party up there speaking to a million women. You had Angela Davis, who was the vice presidential candidate for the Communist Party, up there speaking. Look, it's so blatant now. All of these anti-Trump riots, all of them were orchestrated by communist groups. The Black Lives Matter movement is completely a communist-controlled operation. So it's actually in your face now, and it's a lot harder to deny. And the progressives are throwing caution to the wind. They're doubling down, and they're just about open about it now.
You know, you're absolutely right. Like I said, the Communist Party USA, their name is all over the place now. They're not trying to hide it. It's not buried, you know, in the fine print. And that begs to me to ask what we can say for certain. Barack Obama's affiliation with the Communist Party is. What can we say for certain?
Well, look, Obama is an ideological communist. He was heavily involved at Occidental College in a communist group there. It was the they called it Democratic Socialist Alliance, but it was a communist group. And we interviewed for my movie one of the people who was in there with Obama. He worked with the Communist Party in New York. He worked with the Communist Party in Chicago. He worked with Democratic Socialists of America, the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, all three of them communist groups. He appointed their members to his government. He followed their policy line. Obama is a communist, not a liberal, not a progressive. He is a Marxist-Leninist.
You know, I agree with you, Trevor. Just not that I would know better than you, but when people ask me the question, is he Muslim or is he, what is he? And I always say he is, I feel, he's a communist with Muslim sympathies.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's a big part of our movie too, you know. People need to understand that much of what we call radical Islam is directed by the World Communist Movement. They've weaponized Islam against the West. That doesn't mean every terrorist understands he's working. They think they're working for Allah. They're not. They're working for Moscow, you know, but they don't understand that. And, you know, even in this country, like, for instance, say that the Nation of Islam, you know, back in the 70s, two editors in a row for their major newspaper were Communist Party USA members. So, you know, influencing the Nation of Islam. So this and it's still the situation today, you know. The Nation of Islam is heavily communist influenced. Most of what we call radical Islam in this country is heavily communist influenced. So they are working together. It's a hand in glove operation.
Were you the one that coined the term red green axis?
No, I wasn't, but I wish I had. No, but it's exactly correct.
Yeah.
You know, there's an alliance between Islam and communism, because they both hate America, they both hate Israel, and maybe they'll fight each other over our corpses when we, you know, later, but that's too late for us. So right now we have to deal with them as a total.
Do you, as you've studied this worldwide, and you've made yourself an expert on the communist movement worldwide and radical left, if there's a difference.
Not much.
So the string pulling, the actual nerve center, is it Moscow or is it now America?
Well, that's a very good question. I think a lot of it is still Moscow, but a lot of it is America too. You know, there's probably more communists than there's probably as many communists in Washington as there are in Moscow, and they work together. You know, look, this joke about Trump being in bed with the Russians. Yes, the Russians did try and influence his campaign through people like Paul Manafort. But the Democrats have been in bed with the Russians for more than 50 years now. Hillary Clinton is absolutely in bed with the Russians, you know, through the Skolkovo Foundation. She was funneling huge amounts of American military technology to Moscow, taking a lot of Moscow gold. But, you know, what do you do if you're a communist? You accuse others of what you're doing yourself. You know, and Alinsky said the same thing.
We all now understand that. that happens all. That was like a pattern with the Obama. They really were Exhibit A of that. Whatever they were accusing us of doing, that's what they were doing.
You know, Americans are racist. Well, nobody was more racist than the Obama administration.
You know, and speaking of the Democrats going back with the communists, I think of that memo. I think it was the Veranda files that were revealed, probably in the
Venona files.
And we saw there was a letter in there from Edward Kennedy when he was running for president, trying to make a deal with the communists, that if basically promising them he would be he would work with them more freely, fully, happily. Than Ronald Reagan, and if they would just do what they could domestically to help our elections.
Well, exactly, because they had the Communist Party USA controlling the unions, getting out the vote. Look, the Soviets have been interfering in American elections since the 1940s, probably before. Every election cycle they've tried to influence, every one, and usually on the to the favor of the Democrats. You know, Kennedy was committing treason. Absolutely committing treason. And I talked to a friend of mine who also talked to a CIA officer about this, and he said, were you aware of what Kennedy was doing with the Soviets? And he said, yeah, of course we were, but we said, well, why didn't you do something? He said, well, he was a Kennedy, he was untouchable. And this is the attitude, you know. There are so many people who should be up on treason charges because of their status or social position, they just don't get touched.
Yeah. And that would be the case with Barack Obama as well.
Oh, look, absolutely.
Unbelievable things that normally... I remember, you know, this is not treason, but I just remember this is unthinkable. The first Christmas he was in the White House, I remember they had a Mao Christmas ornament
on the
Christmas tree.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, wasn't that a signal? You know, wouldn't that give you some ideas of what his thinking might be?
Well, we also did not add what you and I both know, that Frank Marshall Davis, his mentor that he mentions in his book over and over again, was a registered communist.
Look, not just a registered communist. He was on the FBI security index, meaning he was such an important communist that had war broken out with the Soviet Union, he would have been arrested that day. They were very worried about Frank Marshall Davis, yet he was the mentor of your president.
Yeah. Let's talk about, because it's relevant now, all of these riots in the streets. I heard you talk about this yesterday here at CPAC on the stage. Let's expand that discussion, Trevor, a little bit to say what we do know about who's out there. You know, the media, the mainstream media is reporting it as, you know, disgruntled Republicans going out to these town halls, you know, that's part of the demonstration that's going on in college campuses. So what do we know about these organizations and their roots and who's funding it? What do we know for sure?
I'll tell you for sure. Every one of these major demonstrations is controlled by one of America's communist parties. Revolutionary Communist Party, Communist Party USA, Workers' World Party, Freedom Road Socialist Organization. Every single one of them are led by communists, without exception. And they have drawn on the Black Lives Matter movement. They've drawn on the Dakota Access Pipeline, sit-ins up there, which was completely controlled by the Communist Party as well. So, yes, they are completely controlled by the communists. They're financed by groups like George Soros, who I believe is a cutout for the Russians anyway. And we have firm evidence that many of the leaders... And we've just put out a little movie. I hope people will watch it. America Under Siege, Civil War 2017. You can get that free online, America Under Siege, Civil War 2017, where we show some of the leaders of the anti-Trump protest movement and their direct ties to Putin's Moscow, to Tehran, and to Venezuela. You know, these are not disgruntled college kids. These are professional revolutionaries working directly with the enemies of the United States.
My guest is Trevor Loudon, and his movie that more recently, or before this, was The Enemies Within. And you can see that movie, enemieswithin.com, trevorloudon.com. When we come back, Trevor, let's talk about the infiltration. I often talk about this almost every day, of the Muslim Brotherhood in our Congress. We have some IT workers now. That story broke, and it just keeps getting more interesting. I want to talk about that and other things when we return. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, coming to you live from where am I? National Harbor, Maryland, at the annual CPAC conference. We'll be right back.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, we're waiting for the president to speak maybe 30 minutes. I'm not sure. The Secret Service has things blocked off, but we're all tucked in. So he'll be speaking, President Donald Trump. It's the first time a president has spoken in his first term since Ronald Reagan spoke here. It's been a long time. It's amazing to see how things have transpired. And it's amazing to see how many good things President Donald Trump has done in his few days in office. I think the one area of major concern for many of us is the national security element of his administration. It seems as though, I'll tell you, just my personal impression, is that he has the right instincts on these issues, as he talked about it when he was campaigning. But a lot of us are concerned about the people that are surrounding him and their knowledge. Trevor, you and I have not talked about that. We could dip into that. Trevor Loudon is my guest. And by the way, let me just say, in regard to the many protests that are going on, let me repeat what he said earlier. America Under Siege, Civil War 2017. Is a piece that you can find that they've just put together. It'll give you something to share about who's behind these groups causing all these disruptions and protests. And also TrevorLoudon.com and the Enemies Within movie. All right, Trevor, what are your concerns about? I don't know. I assumed you have some. Maybe you don't. With this administration and their national security picks.
Well, look, I think they've got some very good people in there, but still there are people that I know that I think should be in the administration, should be right inside Homeland Security, for example, that are not there yet. You know, look at someone like maybe Philip Haney, the Department of Homeland Security whistleblower. Now, he would be a fantastic person to have in the administration to root out, you know, Muslim terrorist sympathizers. And nobody knows more about the infiltration of Muslim Brotherhood sympathizers into the government than Philip Haney. I would love to see him in there. You know, he testified before the Senate, but, you know, he's not there. So I'm just hoping that, you know, they're working their way through the process and they can bring more of these experts in there. Someone like Claire Lopez should be in the government, because there is a huge infiltration problem in this country. And it was rampant under Obama, but it's still there now, and it has to be rooted out. So Mr. Trump, President Trump, has to be serious about doing that. And all indications are that he's on the right track. And I hope these people do get into the administration, but it has to happen.
Yeah, and I have to say clearly that until these appointments are made, and many of them have to be approved by Congress, but not all. And Congress is taking their good, sweet time about it. They're on break right now for 10 days, and they're getting ready to take 2 weeks in April. Even though they know there's a log jam, and even though they know they have a responsibility, they're taking their good, sweet time while the nation is in crisis. And while we're waiting, it's Obama people who are running the show.
Yeah.
Because President Trump can't make all this happen by himself. Trevor, you talked about the infiltration. Certainly, I've spoken about this, but let's talk again. This Pakistani IT group, three brothers, now we think they're two wives and whoever else, it's a big family affair, running IT for Democratic congressmen hired by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. What do we know about what they have done and who they are?
Well, we know the three Pakistani brothers, the talk that one of them was $100,000 in debt to an Iraqi businessman with intelligence ties. So they have been charged with, basically accused of stealing information and stealing equipment. Now, these are people who worked for over 15 years with people on the Intelligence Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, and the Armed Services Committee. Up to 40 Democrats these people have worked for. And the big charge I've made in my movie is there are virtually no security checks in Congress or around Congress. So here is a classic example. Why would three Pakistani, when the war on terror is going on, you're having three Pakistani brothers, obviously not very well vetted, if vetted at all, handling sensitive information for the Intelligence Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, and the Armed Services Committee? What could possibly go wrong? You know, what do you think is going to be happening here? You know, these guys might be totally innocent. and Santa Claus might be coming tomorrow, you know. Clearly there's problems here, but this has been going on for years. There are, look, Americans have to understand internal security in this country is a joke. Even on major committees like Homeland Security, Intelligence, etc., there are congressmen serving on these committees that wouldn't be able to pass an FBI background check to be a realtor or to drive a school bus. You know, Andre Carson on the Intelligence Committee, extensive ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. So now you have three brothers, a couple of wives, another associate, possibly part of a Muslim Brotherhood type or a Pakistani intelligence type spy ring. You know, this should be front page news across the nation, and you have to dig around in websites to even find any information about it.
Well, that's the story, too. I mean, who's reporting? Fox is reporting it. Mm. And of course, our friends of ours are reporting it. You're reporting it. But otherwise, it's not common knowledge. And this is serious. This is a drop-dead news front page story, and yeah, nobody's talking about
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, you know. If this was somebody... if these were Republican congressmen that were being spied on or being, you know, if their staff were doing it, I'm sure it would be front page news. But the media will always cover for the Democrats. And this is just absolutely disgusting, because this is American security. This is lives at risk. This is the future of the nation at risk when this kind of thing is happening.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, her email was the source of so much news and concern because they were leaked. Who did that? These guys were handling her emails. So we could go on and on with that, and yet the Democrats talk about the Russians. You know, it's like there's something going on here that is not being reported. It's very dangerous. All right, let's talk further about the infiltration before this of the Muslim Brotherhood on the halls of Congress. I remember... it seems like it was just last year, Trevor, that they had like Muslim Day at the Capitol or Muslim Staffers Day, and there was just walking up and down the hallways, you know, completely. All right, I guess I may have to make a distinction. Of course, not all Muslims are terrorists, of course, but we are concerned about Muslim doctrine and fleshed out in Sharia. It is a supremacist doctrine that does not play well. It will not be compatible with the American Constitution or freedom.
Well, exactly. Like when I came to America, I had to swear that I'd never been involved in any communist or Nazi organization that sought to overthrow the U.S. Constitution. Every immigrant to America has to sign that declaration. And if you flunk it, you're out. So if you're a Muslim who believes in Sharia law, which is a central doctrine of Islam, you believe Sharia law is a totalitarian political system that believes, basically, is totally opposed to the U.S. Constitution. So effectively, if you're advocating Sharia, which most mosques do, well, they all, virtually all do, otherwise they're not really Islamic, you're advocating the overthrow of the U.S. Constitution. So why should you be even allowed in the country, let alone just have free access to the halls of Congress, walk around the White House, have free access to the president, have influence over the FBI, the CIA, the State Department, the Homeland Security Department, the Education Department, and all of these others? We have to realize the Muslim Brotherhood was trained by the KGB, trained in information operations, trained in espionage, trained in influence operations. When you let them into the White House like that, you are letting the KGB into the White House to run around and just do what they want to do. And under Obama, that was rampant, but it's got to change under Trump. He cannot be sucked in by these people.
The executive branch, I'll just go back to Congress in a minute, but since you mentioned the White House, Trevor, I always felt like the Valerie Jarrett story, you know, the chief advisor to the president, born in Iran, her dad was a part of the Communist Party in Chicago. But besides that, have we ever been able to connect any more dots with her about her associations?
Well, Valerie Jarrett is interesting. Her grandfather was involved in Communist France. Her father was involved in Communist France. Her father-in-law and mother-in-law were card-carrying communists. Her grandfather and her father-in-law and mother-in-law were both worked with Frank Marshall Davis, the Hawaiian, who then moved out to Hawaii, a Communist Party member, moved out to Hawaii and eventually became Barack Obama's mentor. Well, how coincidental is that? You know, both sides of the family can trace their roots back to the Chicago Communist Party. Her mother was involved, has got a child psychology institute, the Erickson Institute in Chicago, which is named after a Communist Party supporter. On her board was Tom Ayers, the father of Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground terrorist who supported Obama, and also Bernadine Dorn, the wife of Bill Ayers, another Weather Underground terrorist member. So this is all pure coincidence, of course. You know, there's no nefarious connections here. Look, Valerie Jarrett, I believe, was Obama's handler. You know, to me, she was the one who kept Obama in line, kept an eye on him for the movement, for the communist movement. And she is a very dangerous woman. She grew up in the movement. Her whole family's in the movement. Obama's family was in the movement. You know, this is just pure coincidence.
He's a red diaper baby. He's amazing.
And so is she.
We're going to run out of time. Let me just say that Trevor's most recent work is America Under Siege, A Civil War 2017, and you can find that at trevorlowden.com and also enemieswithinmovie.com. But Trevor, before the music starts, and I have to say goodbye to you, we'd left the issue of Congress dangling a little bit. There is a whole organization of Muslims inside Congress, staffers, and now we have two Muslim-born congressmen who have ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and one to Louis Farrakhan. What else do we need to know about that?
It's huge. There's huge penetration of Congress by the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, and it's not just the two Muslim congressmen, Keith Ellison and Andre Carson. The head of the Judiciary Committee, John Conyers, who oversees the FBI and sets its budget, has huge ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. So does Luis Gutierrez, who's also on the Judiciary Committee. So does Judy Chu, who's on the Judiciary Committee. Jerry Connolly, there's a whole raft of congressmen who are tied to these people, and a few Republicans amongst them.
Many in the black caucus. Too.
Well, the Congressional Black Caucus is an arm of Cuban foreign policy. The Cubans run the Congressional Black Caucus, which is 40 strong. Then you've got the Progressive Caucus, which is nearly 80 members, virtually all of whom are either communist sympathizers or communist allies. So you've got, that's why I come up with this figure, there's at least 100 members of your house who could not pass an FBI background check. But that doesn't stop them serving on Homeland Security, Armed Services, any of those committees, because there's no background checks in Congress whatsoever.
So Trevor, what we have to do is, President Trump has to get people in place who understand this and can get rid of people and clean out these agencies and put the right people in place who actually understand this, because a lot of good people still don't get this, do they?
No, they don't. And one good step would be to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, put them on the State Department list. That would make it so much harder for your congressman to interact with them, go to their functions, take their money, etc. So that would be one simple step the president could do to really help get on top of this problem.
All right. So have you found everything you're going to find, Trevor? You think you might uncover a few more things?
I think there's a few. Every time I think I've got to the end of the tunnel, it just opens up another rabbit warren. I've got some interesting stuff coming up. We'll be making some movies about, and I think it'll shock Americans even more deeply. So there's more to come.
You're actually working on a sequel right now, right?
Yes. Well, two sequels, actually.
Two sequels.
Yep.
The Enemies Within, what kind of response did you get? Do you feel like you got the play that you had anticipated?
Well, I've been disappointed at the top levels of the conservative media and how they refuse to help. The mid-range stuff has been great. We've had a lot of good interviews, a lot of good publicity. Some congressmen have got on board. We've had a lot of support, but a couple of disappointments there that could have got it out to a bigger audience. But we're just going to keep on pumping it out there for another couple of years, you know. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who've seen it now, And we want to put that well into the millions.
Have you tried, I bet you have, or friends have, try to have a showing in Congress itself for congressmen?
Yeah, that was supposed to have been organized, but that fell through. I'm not quite sure why. We're still trying to figure that one out. But, yes, it has been shown in the Texas state legislature. I think there's going to be a showing in the Arizona state legislature. Every member of the Tennessee state legislature has been given a copy of the movie.
There you go.
So it's getting out there for sure.
Trevor, you're a national treasure, and you are now living here. I know that, and happy to have you. You're the kind of immigrant we want. You knew that, right?
Yeah, well, it's great to be here, and I'm just proud to be part of this country, so it's fantastic.
Trevor Loudon, TheEnemiesWithinMovie.com, TrevorLoudon.com, and America Under Siege, Civil War 2017. Trevor, thanks a lot.
Excellent.
Take care.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.